On 100.1 FM, you are listening to KMXT Kodiak. Stay tuned for the news. Presently 36 degrees outside. We're looking for a high of 42 today. The snow has let off and turned into rain. We're expecting that rain to continue all day. Southeast winds to 20, gusting as high as 25. For tonight, rain mainly before midnight, low of about 37. Southeast winds to 20, decreasing to 15 after midnight. Could gust as high as 30 tonight. And for tomorrow, 30% chance of rain, mainly before 9 a.m. Otherwise, partly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 43, south winds gusting to 25. Coming up on the Midday Report, more new cases reported by the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center. It's been causing problems for our school district. A dam in Heidelberg is at risk of failing. And federal guidelines that have regulated the cruise ship industry would expire on Saturday. And it looks like they won't be extended. Those stories, plus a Petersburg police officer is fired.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Private sector workers cannot be forced to comply with their employer's vaccine or test requirements under a new U.S. Supreme Court decision. But the mandate still holds for anyone working in healthcare. NPR's Andrea Hsu has more on today's mixed ruling from the nation's top court.
By a 6-3 vote along ideological lines, the justices blocked the rule issued by OSHA, the Federal Workplace Safety Agency. That rule would have required some 84 million workers to get vaccinated or undergo weekly testing for the coronavirus. The unsigned majority opinion found that, quote, "This is no everyday exercise of federal power. It is instead a significant encroachment into the lives and health of a vast number of employees." In contrast, the justices voted 5-4 to uphold mandatory vaccinations for healthcare workers at facilities that receive Medicare or Medicaid funding. The court sided with the government's argument that it can impose conditions on how its money is spent. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
President Biden, meanwhile, says he was disappointed with the decision. The federal government's sending reinforcements to hospitals overwhelmed by COVID-19 caseloads. In the coming weeks, military medical teams will head to several states, including New York, Michigan, and New Mexico. President Biden's left the U.S. Capitol without securing the united Democratic front he needs to push through federal voting rights legislation that counter restrictions passed in GOP-led states.
I don't know that we can get it done, but I know one thing. As long as I have a breath in me, as long as I'm in the White House, as long as I'm engaged at all, I'm going to be fighting to change the way these legislatures have moving. Thank you.
Biden speaking to reporters after holding a closed-door meeting with Senate Democrats. The president and congressional Democratic leaders have been trying to overcome a Republican filibuster by changing the Senate rules, but Democrats Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin say that's a bad idea. Without them, Democrats don't have the 60 votes they need to eliminate the filibuster and pass election and voting rights bills. 2021 was the sixth hottest year recorded since 1880, according to a report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That continues a trend of rising temperatures driven by climate change. NPR's Lauren Sommer has details.
The year ended as a record breaker in many places. December was the hottest in more than a century in Texas and nine other central U.S. states. 2021 ranked globally as the sixth hottest year, but NOAA scientists say the more important thing is the overall trend. The past 7 years have been the hottest 7 years since record-keeping began in the late 1800s. That's edging the planet closer to 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, the target that governments around the world have agreed to limit climate change to. Scientists say at the current rate, the world will hit that regularly within a decade or two. Lauren Sommer, NPR News.
It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center has reported 174 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough since Monday. There are 711 cases currently classified as active locally. There's one active case currently hospitalized in Kodiak. Yes, COVID-19 has hit Kodiak hard, and it's also been causing problems for the Kodiak Island Borough School District. KMXT's Dylan Simard brings us this report.
The Kodiak Island Borough School District announced Wednesday in a letter to parents that they will be returning to remote learning effective today with the hope of returning to in-person learning on Tuesday, January 18th. This comes as COVID cases within the Kodiak Island Borough continue to rise to unprecedented levels. The Emergency Operations Center Wednesday reported 174 new cases of COVID-19. Those had been tested between January 4th and 11th. This has brought the active case count to 711 cases. That means that 5% of the Kodiak Island Borough's population is known to presently have COVID using the data from the latest census in 2020. According to the letter, the district has over 60 staff absent with only 12 substitutes available. Over 145 staff and students at the Kodiak High School and 300 staff and students from the district at large are absent for isolation and quarantine. Superintendent Larry Ledoux says that the district just exhausted its supply of healthy staff.
You have to have staff, and you have to have principals in the hallway with kids instead of teaching classes, and you have to have aides there to help people achieve their goals, and you have to have a safe environment for kids. So it just reached a point where we're having to go remote, and it's a difficult decision. I'm really troubled about it. I believe it's the right decision, but it's not a decision I wanted to make, and I hope I don't have to make it again the rest of the year.
Breakfast and lunch will be available to pick up from the high school main entrance between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. for all students Thursday and Friday. There will be a second testing and supply pickup event occurring later this week, according to the school. A date and time have yet to be announced. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
An 8-foot dam on Prince of Wales Island is at risk of failing. Officials said Thursday there's minimal risk to life and property, but a breach could knock out the city of Heidelberg's water supply. Heidelberg Mayor Anthony Christensen says the dam holds back a reservoir containing the bulk of the community's drinking water, and recent storms have put stress on the Heidelberg Dam, which was built in 1939.
The main structure is there, but, you know, it's just the back bracing and a bunch of the boarding that holds the dam up. But the dam's still intact. It just weakened in that storm, so we just got a high level of alert on it.
State officials were alerted on Wednesday to the situation. The state's dam safety engineer, Charlie Cobb, says historic models show low risk of the Heidelberg River flooding the town, but Heidelberg's roughly 400 residents still need to stay alert.
We do not believe that there's any homes or residences at risk, but they should be on the full alert, you know, when it's raining and the rivers are flooding, and watch that dam real closely and just be on guard.
The real danger, he says, would be the loss of Heidelberg's drinking water supply. He says it'd be wise for residents to stock up on potable water in case the 83-year-old dam is compromised. The National Weather Service has issued a flood watch for the region through Saturday morning. That's because heavy rain is in the forecast, which it says may melt deep snowpack, creating excessive runoff. Federal guidelines that have closely regulated the cruise ship industry during the COVID-19 pandemic will expire on Saturday and won't be extended. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, told the U.S. Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions on Tuesday that the conditional sailing orders in effect for cruise lines since last year would be lifted in favor of voluntary participation. Dr. Walensky acknowledged that the decision to allow the orders to expire was coming during the largest spike in infections since the start of the pandemic. Less than 2 weeks ago, the CDC ordered a warning discouraging cruise ship travel regardless of vaccination status. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, who sits on the committee, pressed Walensky for assurance that there would be no last-minute change of course. This is Senator Murkowski, followed by Dr. Walensky.
I understand the conditional sail order is set to expire in a few days in recognition that the companies have practices that adhere to or even exceed the guidance in the order. So I guess I'd like some assurance from you that they can count on that this is clear guidance and messaging to those within the industries and to those who are counting on being able to have a season this coming summer.
Yeah, thank you, Senator. And I think the conditional sales order and the fact that the industry has stepped up and is now interested in doing and exceeding, as you note, the compliance with the sale order without the order even necessarily needing to be in place is a real testimony to how well that has worked and how we've worked collaboratively with the industry. What I can say is that, you know, just over the last 2 weeks with Omicron, we've seen a 30-fold increase in cases on ships during this season because of Omicron. So while I anticipate that with ships following conditional sale order, we still will continue to follow, do the oversight and watch and do all the technical assistance and support in every single way. We anticipate that this order will not be renewed and that the cruise ship industries will continue to understand that this is a really safe practice for those industries. What I can't predict is what the summer will bring.
That's U.S. Centers for Disease Control Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky speaking to Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski during a hearing of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee on Tuesday. The CDC's conditional sailing order was first imposed as a no-sail order in March of 2020, which entirely eliminated Alaska's summer cruise season that year. In October 2020, the agency issued a framework for conditional sailing order that introduced strict guidelines for cruise ships to resume sailings. Most Alaska ports saw a limited return of ships in 2021 once a legal barrier involving Canada was resolved. Due to pent-up demand and travel restrictions elsewhere in the world, the Alaska visitor industry has projected a record cruise season in 2022. Wrangell is losing one of its largest private sector employers. Alaska Crossings, a wilderness program for at-risk youth, has been anchored on the island for more than two decades. KSTK's Sage Smiley has this report.
Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, announced Wednesday in a written statement that the Wilderness Expedition program would be permanently closed, effective immediately, and resources and gear consolidated with its other adolescent residential treatment program, Ravensway, in Sitka. That effectively dissolved the Wrangell-based behavioral health program that led Wilderness Expedition trips each summer for teens in Tongass National Forest. The announcement was not completely unexpected. SEARCH had said it was exploring options for the Crossings program over the last year. At one point in 2020, it was considering moving some or all of the program to Sitka, but that didn't happen. At the time, Wrangell's tribal government passed a resolution opposing Crossings' move out of town, citing the program's economic and social importance to the community of Wrangell. At its peak, Crossings employed more than 20 staffers in its Wrangell office, plus around 50 seasonal guides, and led expeditions for an average of 120 young people each year. In a statement, SEARCH wrote that the COVID-19 pandemic had a big impact on its adolescent residential treatment programs. The tribal health provider stated that rising costs, lower patient enrollment, and staffing issues forced SEARCH to reconsider its residential treatment structure. SEARCH spokesperson Megan Bozak wrote in an email that when Crossings was dissolved on January 12th, it employed 16 people in Wrangell. Four of those employees were offered positions in Sitka, she said, and 12 were offered commensurate positions in Wrangell. She added, at the height of the summer 2021 season, there were 25 seasonal guide positions in town who oversaw 16 Crossings expeditions over the course of the season. It's unclear whether any of those previously employed temporary workers would be reassigned. Wrangell Mayor Steve Prasunka, who helped found the program in 2001, declined to comment. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
A Petersburg police officer was fired from the department after posting an offensive social media post. As KFSK's Angela Denning reports, the post appears to be supportive of Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany, but the former officer says it was taken out of context.
The Juneau Empire newspaper broke the story about Johnny Duane Pickle on January 7th. The 43-year-old started work as an officer with the Petersburg Police Department at the end of last June. He was paid just over $30 per hour. The Empire story showed a Facebook post made under the account of J.D. Pickle. The post includes a photo of his son wearing a Hitler mustache, standing straight, and making a Nazi salute. It was accompanied by the comment, "Got to raise them Reich." Pickle told KFSK the post was taken out of context and was a comment responding to a friend. He says the image was of his son playing out his favorite movie with his cousins. The film Jojo Rabbit is a modern comedy about Nazi Germany.
If you haven't watched it, it's pretty entertaining. And it's got kids fighting in a war. And they were just, one little boy was Captain America, and he was part of the Jojo Rabbit army.
And then the comment says, "Raise 'em Reich."
Yeah. Well, there's absolutely no harm meant behind it.
Okay. But when you combine the, like, Nazi salute with the comment, "Raise 'em Reich."
I understand how that was perceived. It didn't look, looking back on it, it didn't look good.
Pickle was raised in Virginia and worked there as an officer for a few years before coming to Petersburg. He says the borough fired him after talking to him once during an investigation. A brief statement from the borough's clerk and human resources director, Debbie Thompson, said a complaint about Pickle was posted on the borough's Facebook page December 12th. He was placed on administrative leave while the police department conducted an internal investigation. The statement said that the borough doesn't comment on personnel investigations. However, it confirmed that Pickle was no longer employed by the borough as of January 3rd of this year. Pickle was still in the probationary period of his employment. Mayor Mark Jensen declined to comment, calling it an administrative issue. Borough manager Steve Giesbrecht declined to answer any further questions. Police Chief Jim Kerr did not respond to calls from KFSK. Pickle says he didn't mean to offend anyone with his post and said the Holocaust was horrible.
It was nothing malicious was meant behind it. When they told me it was anti-Semitic remarks, I had an idea of what that was. But to get the true meaning, I actually Googled it and I was like, oh, I see why it raised such a stink that it did. And I regret ever posting that because of what has resulted from it.
Mary Cypers is the Pacific Northwest Regional Director for the Anti-Defamation League, an organization that works to fight hate and promote civil rights. She calls the post disturbing.
Because trust in law enforcement is so important, and I think that the actions that he took displayed a true lack of judgment. And in a time where hate is rising and anti-Semitism is rising, these kinds of behaviors can really create a barrier for people being able to trust law enforcement and building stronger relationships with the community.
Cypers is grateful the department and police chief acted quickly. She says the rise of hate and extremism is becoming more common in society and in social media in general, but she doesn't see it as a widespread phenomenon in law enforcement. Pickle says he plans to stay in Petersburg and is currently looking for another job. With help from Joe Vicnicki, I'm Angela Denning in Petersburg.
A new food truck park is coming to downtown Ketchikan in the spring. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, the owner hopes the Dock Street Yard will provide a home for food trucks stymied by a lack of space.
Dock Street Yard owner Amber Adams says her passion for good food comes from her roots.
Definitely, you know, being from Louisiana, I'd say we don't, you know, eat to live, we live to eat. So we definitely love cooking, we love eating, and I mean, anything that's going to bring more food choices up here, I think, is awesome.
Adam says she moved from New Orleans in July 2019 with her husband, a psychiatrist at Ketchikan's hospital. She says at first she dreamed of opening a standalone restaurant serving Southern and Cajun food, but she says she wanted to start a little smaller.
And finally we're like, okay, let's just start with a food truck. Let's start small. Let's start with something that we can handle, a cuisine we can handle in a small space.
Street tacos came to mind. She bought a trailer, but finding a place to park it was difficult.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously they allow food trucks up here, but you cannot be on a public street more than 2 hours at a time. So it's a challenge. Where do you park your food truck if you want to serve, you know, like all day? You don't want to be moving every 2 hours.
That's when she thought back to a property she'd noticed shortly after arriving in town. The downtown lot nestled between a sandwich chain and a Chinese restaurant on Dock Street was up for sale, and she started thinking a little bigger than a taco trailer.
And when we kind of started talking about the food truck and realizing that having a spot was kind of the golden egg more than having the truck. The price had dropped on this again, and I felt like it was just kind of serendipitous. So there we went. And so we started going, okay, let's make a big leap, and we can get more than just our truck on here. And that's where that started.
Now she's envisioning space for three trucks or trailers on the lot, each with their own menu. She'll provide utility hookups, plus some seating, covered, of course, here in rainy Ketchikan. The idea is to rent space to other food truck vendors looking for a semi-permanent place to set up year-round.
And so now where we are is that we're going to put the three rental spots down here. You know, it'll be a small lot, but hopefully cute, nice fencing, nice lighting, you know, just a nice, fun place for people to come and eat. And then at the top, our ultimate goal is we'll be putting in our own cafe up there.
Adam says she plans to build a standalone building overlooking the lot to house the cafe. That'll allow her to serve beer and wine, along with things like shrimp and grits, crawfish etouffee, and other Southern and Cajun standbys.
Fried chicken, good spicy fried chicken. That's my favorite, with crispy skin. So just basically, yeah, anything that'll give you diabetes and get you fat, pretty much, we're very excited to serve.
That portion is a ways off. Adam says she's currently aiming to open the cafe in late 2023. But in the meantime, she's planning to rent out the trailer stalls and start serving customers. Nothing is set in stone just yet, but Adam says there's been some interest.
But yeah, we have someone interested in doing poke on the lot, which I think would be fantastic because we don't have any of that in any of the restaurants here. So I'm thrilled for that. And then, we've had people cheesesteaks, pizza, tacos. We've had a lot of people kind of reach out to us, so I'm hoping that we'll have no problem getting people on here. I mean, it's a good spot. You know, you want it to become like a little family food lot, so that's what we're hoping it'll be.
Adam says she's hoping to have the food truck park open for business on May 1st. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
In music, sampling is the reuse of a portion or sample of a sound recording in another recording. Commonly sampled elements include strings, bass lines, drum loops, vocal hooks, or entire bars of music. And as sampling technology has progressed, the possibilities for manipulation have grown greatly. Before the rise of sampling, DJs had used turntables to loop breaks from records, which could then be rapped over. Stevie Wonder's 1979 album Journey Through the Secret Life of Plants may be the first album to make extensive use of samples. My Life in the Bush of Ghosts by David Byrne and Brian Eno is an important early work of sampling, incorporating samples of recordings including Arabic singers, radio disc jockeys, and an exorcist. Big Audio Dynamite pioneered sampling in rock and pop with their 1985 album, This is Big Audio Dynamite. Producer DJ Shadow used an MPC-60 to create his influential 1996 album, Introducing, which is composed entirely of samples. Here are some famous sampled songs. Kanye West in his popular song, Champion, off of Graduation, borrowed from Steely Dan's Kid. Love the instrumentals in Drake and Rihanna's Take Care? It's sampled from Gil Scott Heron's I'll Take Care of You. Common chooses to use samples in some of his songs. In one of his latest efforts, Blue Sky, he picked a piece of Electric Light Orchestra's Mr. Blue Sky. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Here's your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 13th day of January, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:43. It will set again at 4:53. That will give us 7 hours and 10 minutes of daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 6 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 2 degrees, set in 1921, and a record high was 52, set in 1940. Currently 35 degrees out at the airport under overcast skies. They are showing southwest winds to 7. We are supposed to be getting southeast winds up to 20, gusting to 25 today. And rain all day, mainly until midnight, low of around 37. Southeast winds tonight as well, decreasing to 15 after midnight. but could gust as high as 30 overnight. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 5:51 p.m. That will be 8/10 of a foot here on the east side. That'll be followed by a high tide at 12:31 a.m. of 5.9 feet. Our low tide for early in the morning tomorrow will be at 4:58 a.m. and be 3.9 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning will be at 11:14 a.m. and be 8.7 feet here on the east side. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 6:11 p.m. That will be a 1 foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a high tide at 12:38 a.m. of 10.1 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5:52 a.m. and be 5.4 feet. And your high tide tomorrow morning in Larson Bay will be 11:48 a.m. and be 13.3 feet. Mariners, we do have a storm warning today for the Shelikof Strait. Northeast wind increasing to 50 knots today, diminishing to 25 knots later this afternoon. Seas building to 13 feet. For tonight, east winds to 25 knots, becoming south 20 after midnight. Seas 8 feet, subsiding to 5 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, southwest 15, seas 4 feet. Friday night, west 25, seas 5 feet. On our east side, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, gale warning tonight. Southeast 30, seas to 14 feet, building to 20 feet this afternoon. For tonight, south 35, seas 24 feet. And for tomorrow on our east side, southwest 20, seas 18 feet, subsiding to 13 feet tomorrow afternoon. For Friday night, southwest 20, seas to 11 feet. The senior citizens of Kodiak need paper bags. You can drop them off between 12 and 1, Monday through Friday, at the back door of the Senior Citizens Center. Thank you. Your Kodiak High School Bears hockey team will be hosting Houston this weekend. That's happening Friday and Saturday at Baranoff Park. Puck drops for varsity on Friday will be at 8 p.m. and Saturday will be at 7:30 p.m. JV plays on Friday at 1 p.m. and Saturday at 9 a.m. Arrive early to varsity games and stop by the entry table. The first 50 people will have a chance to win a prize during the second intermission. No entry fee, but donations are greatly appreciated. Concessions will be open during the varsity games, cash and check only. The Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary will be meeting virtually on Saturday. That begins at 10 a.m. Email them at kodiakhospitalauxiliary, one word, at gmail.com for Zoom connection. New members are always welcome. There will be a Board of Education work session immediately followed by a special meeting on January 17th at 6:30 p.m. These meetings will be conducted virtually through BlueJeans. Meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. Items on the special meeting agenda include adoption of Board of Education final decision on complaint and an executive session to discuss personnel and school finance. The Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will hold their next regular monthly meeting Tuesday, January 18th. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. via Zoom. If you would like to sit in on the meeting, please call the station at 486-3181 or send an email requesting access to gm@kmxt.org, and a link will be provided to you before the meeting. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is conducting research this winter to document the importance of subsistence resources to Kodiak residents. Stop by the Bayside Fire Hall between 6:30 and 8 p.m. on Tuesday to pick up an information packet on local subsistence opportunities and research, and how to apply to be a local research assistant. Project staff will be available to answer questions, and outdoor refreshments will be served. Call 267-267-2368 for more information. And the Kodiak History Museum, Kodiak Arts Council, and the City of Kodiak are inviting artists to submit qualifications to design an outdoor public art installation in downtown Kodiak as part of the Kodiak Asphalt Art Initiative. The artwork will be located in an area near the ferry terminal parking lot, including nearby crosswalks and sidewalks, and will connect the terminal and visitor center with the museum district. The primary goal for the project is to revitalize an underutilized public space and create a pedestrian plaza for visitors and locals alike to enjoy. Artist submission deadline is January 21st, and you want to go to the Kodiak Arts Council website.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.